desire that we are up to no good.
Welcome to We Solemnly Swear, a Mickelson podcast. We are a group of sisters who want to share our crazy passion and knowledge for the wizarding world with our fellow Potterheads.
Well, today we have
Nadine, your historical Hufflepuff.
Lexi, your cliffhanger Hufflepuff.
And Tori, your recording Ravenclaw. We're cool.
There were once three brothers who were traveling along. Stop it. Being serious. There were once three brothers who were traveling along a long, winding road at twilight. In time, the three brothers reached a river too deep to wade through and too dangerous to swim across. However, these brothers were learned in the magical arts, so they simply waved their wands and made a bridge appear across the treacherous water. They were halfway across it when they found their paths blocked by a hooded figure. Death spoke to them. He was angry that he had cheated them out of three new victims, for travelers usually drowned in the river. But Death was cunning. He pretended to congratulate the three brothers upon their magic and said that each had earned a prize for having been clever to evade him. So the eldest brother, who was a combative man, asked for a wand more powerful than any in existence, a wand that must always win duels for its owner, a wand worthy of a wizard who had conquered Death. So Death crossed to an elder tree on the banks of the river, fashioned a wand from a branch that hung there, and gave it to the eldest brother. Then the second brother, who had an arrogant man, decided that he wanted to humiliate Death still further and asked for the power to recall others from Death. So Death picked up a stone from the riverbank and gave it to the second brother and told him that the stone would have the power to bring back the dead. And then Death asked the third and youngest brother what he would like. The youngest brother was the humblest and also the wisest of the brothers, and he did not trust Death. So he asked for something that would enable him to go forth from the place without being followed by Death, and Death most unwillingly handed over his own cloak of invisibility. Then Death stood aside and allowed the three brothers to continue on their way, and they did so, talking with wonder of the adventure that they had had, and admiring Death's gifts. In due course, the brothers separated, each to their own destination. The first brother traveled on for a week or so and reached a distant village, sought out a fellow wizard whom he had had a quarrel. Naturally, with the Elder Wand and his weapon, he could not fail to win the duel that followed, leaving his enemy dead upon the floor. The eldest brother proceeded to an inn where he boasted loudly of the powerful wand that he had snatched from Death himself and how it had made him invincible. That very night, another wizard crept upon the eldest brother as he lay, wine-sodden upon his bed. The thief took the wand and, for good measure, slit the elder brother's throat. And Death took the first brother for his own. Meanwhile, the second brother journeyed on to his home where he lived alone, where he took out the stone that had the power to recall the dead and turned it thrice in his hand. To his amazement and his delight, the figure of a girl that he had once hoped to marry before her untimely death appeared and at once before him. Yet she was sad and cold, separated from him by a veil. Though she had returned to the mortal world, she did not truly belong there and suffered. Finally, the second brother, driven mad of hopeless longing, killed himself as to truly join her. And so Death took the second brother for his own. But though Death searched for the third brother for many years, he was never able to find him, though it was only when he had attained a great age that the youngest brother finally took off the cloak of invisibility and gave it to his son, and he greeted Death as an old friend and went with him gladly, and, as equals, they departed this life.
So good! I didn't know how to end that.
So good! So good.
If you couldn't tell, today we're talking about the tale of the three brothers, and thank you to Nadine for that wonderful storytelling. That was beautiful.
No, you know.
And her, like, half-in, half-out British accent.
Well, you know, it started turning, like, Scottish at times, and I was like, dang it. Go back.
It was excellent. So, The Tale of the Three Brothers. We'll just start with the basics and then dive into some of the theories or the symbolism, is that the word I'm trying to say, of this story to the Harry Potter series. So,
yes,
we know that this story was written by Beedle the Bard. That's the name of the author on the book. And the what's the name of the book that this is found in?
The Tales of Beedle the Bard.
The Tales of Beedle the Bard. Thank you. So we know that he was an English wizard and an author of wizarding fairy tales. And there's this quote from J.K. Rowling about regarding Beedle, because apparently his first name's Beedle and his last name is the Bard.
Beedle the Bard.
So she says that if his stories accurately reflect his opinions, that means he rather liked muggles, whom he regarded as ignorant rather than malevolent. He mistrusted dark magic, and he believed that the worst excesses of wizard kind sprang from the all too human traits of cruelty, apathy, or arrogant misapplication of their own talents. The heroes and heroines who triumph in his stories are not those with the most powerful magic, but rather those who demonstrate the most kindness, common sense, and ingenuity. Which is really, I think that's a really powerful quote about, like, not putting muggles down. Don't let the muggles get you down, right? Like,
exactly. Yeah.
We are powerful. We're strong.
We are witches.
We are witches. We're witches. So, some people have made the connection between Beedle the Bard and another famous bard that we know, William Shakespeare. And we also, they also made the connection to an Anglo-Saxon historian, his whose name is Bede from medieval times. So I don't know if JK's like commented on this, but a lot of people have just like made the fan theory that William Shakespeare was a wizard and wrote magical fairy tales on the side.
He's like, for my muggle audience. Yeah.
But, like, my wizard. His stories and his plays have a lot of magic in them. Just saying.
That's true. Actually, I don't know that. I don't read Shakespeare. So.
What?
Indeed.
There's a lot of magic. There's witches and wizards.
I was forced to read Shakespeare in high school, and I never looked back.
And I never looked back. It distracts from the now, darling.
The now, darling.
I, like, read Shakespeare for fun, so...
Oh my.
I was a theater nerd.
How are we friends?
Harry Potter, dude. Harry Potter.
Harry Potter. Harry Potter. That's how we're friends. Right. That's right. That's me.
That's me.
No, yeah. So my cute, adorable husband bought me the illustrated version of Tales of Beedle the Bard that they sell at Costco. It's ginormous. That's why you probably heard page turning while I was reading the stories, because I couldn't even get these huge monstrous pages to turn.
It was just a really realistic experience.
It yes, was.
Yes, you'll. I should have had a fire crackling in the background.
We can add that in later. Post.
Yeah, I'll add nice. That in. but yeah, it's really, really cute. But the illustration is pretty unique. It's like when it says he did greeted death as an old friend.
This oh, is what oh it my.
Like. Like they're for our listeners, it's like taking a selfie with death. Like,
but also, which one is death? Because they both look like death.
I know. They look, one's a skeleton, so I'm going with that one. But
oh my goodness, that's great.
Their
that's
smiles funny. Are like, hi.
This is a children's book? That's out of my nightmares.
This is yes, supposed
that
to be
is
a kid's
very
movie.
Much out of my nightmares. And it has, yeah, it's got pretty, is the illustrations are very entertaining. It's got, like, when he's, like, he searched for years for death. I'll show you that one. He's, like.
We'll have Tori, we can put all this in our Instagram story, right?
Yes.
It's got, like, five houses to choose from. You see oh. death right there in the, it's like yeah. a white
he looks lost.
He's just, like, where is
where
he?
Where do you go now? His
where
hands
did
on
you
his
go?
Hips.
Where'd you go? I miss you so. Anyways, it's a really, really cute book, and it's got all of the commentary from Albus Dumbledore in it as well. At the end of,
interesting.
It's got like footnotes. So he'll be reading the story and it'll add a footnote and he'll comment on it. And so a lot of it's really interesting. So I recommend the book for anyone that wants to buy it.
It's kind of a side tangent. Did the one that he gave to Hermione have commentary from him?
No.
Just no, right? It just had the penciled in Deathly Hallows.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
wouldn't that have been interesting, though?
He's like, Hermione, let me tell you.
On Babbity Wabbity, here's the symbol.
Yeah, the ministry definitely would have caught on to that. But yeah, just a few pointers from his commentary on this story, because he comments on every story in the book. But on the Tales of the Three Brothers, he says that obviously this story had a profound impression on him as a boy. Go figure. He said he asked his mother to read it to him multiple times every night before bed.
His mom's like, something's wrong with my son. He's a little obsessed with death. Like,
death? Yeah. He said they got in a lot of fights with Aberforth, who wanted to read Babbity Rabbity. So,
it's apparently Ron's favorite, too.
Yeah. He does comment, similar to what Lexi was saying, about how the third brother is the wisest in knowing that he can only postpone his meeting with death. And that, kind of just like to what you were saying, is that the victors in these stories are the ones who demonstrate common sense and all that, like what you were saying. And so that's definitely the third brother, because the first two brothers were not so smart. But he talks about the invisibility cloak, and in one of the footnotes, it does mention that it is a disillusionment charm that Dumbledore has perfected and is so powerful that that's why Dumbledore doesn't need an invisibility cloak when he tells Harry that in the first book.
Oh.
And he's like, I don't need a invisibility cloak to become invisible.
That's the, like, egg crack on your head charm, right?
Yeah.
It's exactly what
filling,
it's called.
Yes, the filling. An egg doesn't actually crack on your head, but
that's how you make the charm.
It's part of it. You throw the egg on that person.
No, that's how he describes it. And don't you remember that game when you were little where you would, like, pretend to crack the egg?
Yes, and you did that to me all the time, and I hated it.
A knife in your back and the blood is running down.
Oh my gosh.
Anyways.
That's a trip down memory lane.
Oh my gosh.
But Dumbledore does say either the descendants of this brother didn't know where the cloak came from, or they were just as smart as their ancestor, and it says, quote, determined to show their ancestors wisdom by not trumpeting the fact that they owned death's cloak. So either they knew it and they kept the family secret, keep it secret, keep it safe, or they just didn't know.
Interesting.
And then also in the commentary, it's got a track record for the Elder Wand. Obviously, Dumbledore was hunting for it, so he, like, tracked down the known wizards, and he can track it back to, like, some of the first owners, which is pretty cool. So that's another cool reason to get the book. There's a saying that wands of Elder never prosper. And I didn't really understand that, because it's the Elder Wand and it's going to win no matter what.
Yeah, but it never stays with the same person, right? Like,
yeah, because it just, that, they boast of it. And then
the
they
person
die,
who so. Has a wand of Elder may prosper in the short term, but not, like, long term. Because they'll always be defeated by someone else for their wand.
Yeah.
Unless you're Harry Potter.
You just snap that
then
bad boy.
You choose to end it. And then the wand didn't prosper, so.
Oh my goodness. So it's correct. Okay. So then the last thing, kind of Dumbledore's closing remarks, he just says, so as he, like, researched the Deathly Hallows, he says that humans have a knack for choosing precisely the things that are worse for them. Wizards and muggles alike are imbued with a lust for power. How many would resist the wand of destiny? which human being, having lost someone they loved, could withstand the temptation of a resurrection stone? Even I, Albus Dumbledore, would find it easiest to refuse the invisibility cloak, which only goes to show that, clever as I am, I remain just as big a fool as anyone else.
It's interesting.
That's true. He is a fool.
He is fool.
Run, you fool.
Run, you fool.
No, they say fly, you fool. Oh, man. All right. So many believe that the three brothers were inspired by the three Peverell brothers, which do have ties to Dumbledore, Harry, and even Lord Voldemort. The Peverell brothers are named Antioch, Cadmus, and Ignotus. They were all born in Godric's Hollow. Sometime in the 13th century, the Peverells were a pure-blooded family, according to Nature's Nobility, a wizarding genealogy. Hermione talks about that. The Peverell family died out among wizarding families through the male line. So there are still heirs. They're just all through girls, and they don't carry the name. As we all know. So Antioch was the eldest brother, and he received the Elder Wand. He was supposedly murdered in his sleep by having his throat slit. Cadmus, being the second brother, was given the resurrection stone. He killed himself because of excessive grief. The love that he had brought back was merely an echo and yearned to return to the afterlife. The Gaunt family is descended from Cadmus. Since they had the stone, Marvolo, like, shows it off to that guy from the ministry. He, like, pushes it in his face. This proves that Cadmus at least had lived long enough to have children. And there's a rumor on the Potter Wiki that guesses that his beloved that he brought back had actually died in childbirth. Oh. So the stone remained in the family, but that is why, which is super sad. Lose your mom and then your dad kills himself. Like, lovely. And then Ignotus was the last brother. He received the cloak and he lived a long life and then passed the cloak on to his son. So this, I can't remember where I found this from. Probably not wizardingworld.com. The cloak was passed from parent to child and was easy to track since they each evaded death. According to the wiki. There you go. I found it on the Potter Wiki. Eolanthe. Yep, sure. We're going to go with that. Peverell was the granddaughter of Ignotus. She inherited the cloak from her grandfather due to no male heirs in the family. Eolanthe married Hardwin Potter. And to keep with the tradition, the cloak was passed father to son. And now it's just through the Potter line because they are now the male heirs. I'd like to point out that the Tale of the Three Brothers, everyone talks about how it's the Peverell brothers, but they also sit there and say that the three brothers created the hallows, the three things, the wand, the stone, and the cloak, which would be amazing magic. But there was the two like sides of the debate. Like, they were given it by death, and then no, they were just brilliant enough that they created those amazing things.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't think we know enough about like the afterlife in the wizarding world to be able to like say whether it was actually death or whether they were just like really, really powerful.
Well, I mean, Nadine does have a picture of death, so
she knows what death looks like.
True that.
When he's searching. Oh my gosh, that's the best picture.
I swear he was just here.
Oh my goodness. I always want the song, like, and I would walk 500 miles in the background of that picture.
Oh my All right. gosh.
Sorry.
So, the Deathly Hallows, as Tori mentioned already, and Nadine, they are the Elder Wand, which is the unbeatable wand, the Resurrection Stone, which can bring back the dead, and the Cloak of Invisibility, which hides the wearer even from death. And these three make up the symbol of the Deathly Hallows, with the triangle, the circle, and then the line. And that is the Deathly Hallows symbol that has kind of, like, next to the lightning bolt, has come to, like, represent the whole Harry Potter fandom, right?
It's true.
Like, I think
everyone puts it, I always says the A for always. It drives me bonkers.
Oh my gosh, I know, because they put it with, like, a cursive always,
yep.
right?
Yep.
And then it's,
yep.
like, this, like, yep. line triangle, and I'm like, two different fonts, guys. I know it's not a font, but still. It drives me crazy. Anyways.
So if it were a stick font, would it be okay?
Yeah. It would be okay. Or if you made like a curvy Deathly Hallows. I don't know.
A curvy.
Like, so I need you to draw me a curvy Deathly Hallows.
On it.
Okay.
So
yeah, like make it like a whooshy cloak.
A whooshy cloak.
I know, like, I never was a big fan of this symbol. Like, I always wish it was something cooler than it was. I just thought it looked weird. And so it always made me sad that, like, I had to do that to represent my love for Harry Potter. Anyways, that's totally well, a side tangent.
You know, ticks Victor Krum off pretty bad.
Like, I know! He hates it.
Sign of Grindelwald.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Nadine, because that's
forgot to write that
from
one
our
down.
List.
I'm sorry.
So these are some of the places that we see the Deathly Hallows. You hear about the symbol being used in the books. On Durmstrang walls, Grindelwald puts it on the wall, and Victor Krum, like, is pissed off about it. And that's why in the seventh book, when he sees Mr. Lovegood, Xenophilus's necklace, another place we see the symbol, he, like, freaks out, and he's like, he's with the devil. It's like, whoa, Victor, calm down.
He's like, if he was not a guest of Fleur's, I would duel him right here.
Oh, man. So we see it in those two places. We see it on the gravestone of Ignotus Peverell, and that's where Hermione finds it and makes the connection between that and the symbol in the book. So it's found also in the book that she receives from Dumbledore. It is in the Marvolo Gaunt's family ring, so it's in the Resurrection Stone, and you can kind of see that in the movie too, which is pretty cool. It is Albus Dumbledore's signature? Oh, in the letter, right?
In the letter to Grindelwald.
In the letter to Grindelwald.
From the life and lives of Dumbledore.
Yes. And then
the
it is...
The symbol, it keeps coming up.
Also carved onto Leta Lestrange's desk in Crimes of Grindelwald.
True that.
True that.
Which is interesting.
So.
Very interesting.
We see it in a lot of places, and I feel like it's like that resistance symbol, right? Like, I just finished reading Red Rising, the series. I don't know if either of you have seen it. But they use, like, the sling blade, right?
Yep.
As, like, their resistance symbol, and they, like, paint it on things and carve it into things, and it's, like, a signal to everyone that we're all on the same page. So it was kind of used as, like, the club membership, right? Like, if you knew what that meant, then you were part of the club.
Part of the crew, part of the ship.
Part of the
crew. Oh, man, that's awesome. So we're going to go into some theories that have come about this story. The first one is a big one, that Dumbledore is death. Dun, dun, dun. So I found this from Business Insider. It's all over the place. I tried to find a more renowned source rather than Tumblr, guys. Give me a break. I believe it began on Tumblr anyway, so just calm down.
But JK confirmed it, so.
Oh.
She liked it.
She liked it. But she's read it and she liked it.
Interesting.
It's got her like of approval.
Kind of her like of approval. No, so this is just kind of a small synopsis of what it means. Dumbledore is the person that gifts Harry not only the cloak but the stone as well. If you remember at the very beginning of Philosopher's Stone, Harry receives a Christmas gift, and that is the cloak. It says, use it well. But then the stone in the seventh book, he has left it in Dumbledore's will. It says, I open at the close. Of course, Harry can't open it until the very, very end of the book. The close. And Dumbledore is the means by which Harry becomes the master of the Elder Wand, because he is behind Snape and Voldemort's deaths. Dumbledore also greets Harry at King's Cross when a part of Harry literally dies. So it's kind of just like everything points to
like
how...
Like an old friend.
Well, like there's more friend. To it too, Tor, like, right? Like, they compare Harry... Well, I'll start at the beginning with the Elder Wand, right? They compare that to Voldemort, that Voldemort is that brother, because he's driven by power and like a thirst.
Oh, that's
to
a
rule.
Whole different thing.
But well, yes, it goes into it. It's the same theory. But, like, Voldemort is the first brother with the wand, driven by power, And he dies basically by Dumbledore's hand, right? Like, Harry wouldn't have been able to kill him without Dumbledore's help. And then Snape is the second brother because he's driven by a lost love, which is Lily. And he dies by Dumbledore's hand, kind of. But, like, the idea is that, like, he was working for Dumbledore. And, yeah. And then Harry is the third brother who is humble and has the cloak. And he dies by Dumbledore's hand because he was raised as a pig for slaughter. And so then Dumbledore is, like, death for all three of those characters.
Yep. Yep.
I was like, Harry dies? What? It's like, we don't know that. She like, lives to this day. He is alive. What are you talking about?
What just happened?
Wow. Okay.
Oh, man. There was also, like, an appendage to this theory that I read, too, that said that this limbo state that Harry goes into after he dies, they think that it's, like, the same limbo state for Voldemort. And that's why, I mean, we know that, like, it's his little baby Horcrux that's hanging out there. But, like, they think it's the same. It, like, all three of them went to the same limbo. And, like, I don't know. I didn't read too much into it. I just thought it was interesting to think about.
Oh, like the three Hallows.
Yeah.
Are just stuck in King's Cross.
No, I'm pretty sure Dumbledore pushed Voldy into the train tracks.
Die, little baby Voldy.
He didn't look like that before Harry got there. I don't know why he's like that. He's just laying on the ground.
He's just whimpering for no reason.
Don't go over there, Harry. You'll see the train track. Oh,
don't look at it.
So one of the other theories I came across, and Tori kind of added on to this too.
Harry.
But no, don't be sorry. It's awesome.
You were on my back about it.
They were just talking about, like, not the story in particular, but just the three brothers. And someone was asking, like, where did the veil come from that's in the Department of Mysteries, right, that Sirius dies in? And one of the theories about that veil is that they were, like, the brothers actually created the Hallows instead of being gifted them. And so the brother who was trying to find his lost love and bring back someone from the dead created the veil as, like, prototype number one, right? And he knew he was close because he could hear the voices of people who had died. But instead of, like, being able to bring him back, he just made, like, a one-way door to death instead of bringing him the other way, too. So it was, like, something he had created and was like, nope, and then moved on to his other idea, which was the ring.
He left it there. See, I liked my answer to that. I think that...
I did, too.
The veil is the rest of Death's cloak, because Death hung it up after years and years of searching for Ignatius. He's like,
sucks. Nope, I'm done.
I'm out. Find That's somebody else to do this job. I've
been worn by someone for too long.
I'm not getting paid enough for this.
One of the other theories I read was that the brothers were obsessed with Thestrals, which are like a symbol of death, right? We know that people can only see Thestrals if you've seen someone die. And so this, again, these are all on like Tumblr and Quora and all this stuff. So don't put much stock into these. They're just interesting to think about.
Hey, but... the collective mind of the human race is amazing.
So they said that they got all the pieces, like all three of the Hallows from a Thestral. So the wand is like the backbone of a Thestral or something.
What the? At least do the femur. That wouldn't make any sense.
Okay, I don't know wood. If it's backbone. Okay. Oh, no. That's not what it was. I'm so sorry. I messed that up.
The core is a Thestral.
The Thestral core. That's where it comes from. Yeah. Totally screwed that up. The core of the wand is from a Thestral. And we already know that that's true.
That's true.
They said they were thinking that the ring was like an eyeball of a Thestral. It's kind of gross. And then the cloak was, like, skin of the Thestral.
Oh, like, God.
Cut off of it.
I never want to wear an invisibility cloak ever again. I know.
But, like, people commented and they were like, well, wouldn't then, like, anyone who'd seen death be able to, like, see through your invisibility cloak? Like, Luna Lovegood's like, Harry, what are you doing?
Harry.
So
I see you over there, Harry.
But it's interesting, the fascination with death, and like instead of it being death giving them the hollows, it's like the symbol of death, which is the Thestral. Anyways.
Interesting.
Curious.
And then one of our other honorable mentions is this article from thewizardingworld.com, and it talks about how the Tale of the Three Brothers shapes the whole Harry Potter series. So, Tor, I'll have you start us off, because you like the beginning part, right?
Oh, yeah. I appreciated the beginning much more than any of the other parts. So I wrote down this part. So it says, the foundation of the Tale of the Three Brothers is the idea that death is something that can be evaded. The three men do cheat death, but only in a temporary way, as they are pursued throughout their lives, with death hoping to claim what he was due. Their situation mirrors Voldemort, who spends his lifetime hoping to achieve immortality and reap the benefits. Ultimately, as with the three brothers, death caught up with Voldemort and his quest to become notorious and powerful through gaining mastery over it. It was over. What the frick? I should have reread my quote before I allowed that to be there.
You're good.
Basically, I really liked how that part really just, I don't know, clicked well for me. Like, it is very interesting. Like, it's surprising that Voldemort didn't go for these stories, these legends.
Yeah.
However, I guess he was kind of raised in the Muggles, but.
Yeah, but like what I got from this article was that like the story is like a symbol of the entire Harry Potter series, right?
Yeah.
The different elements that we see in the
story. Each character
is
represented.
Yeah, and like the themes of trying to cheat death, like that's what Voldemort was doing with the Philosopher's Stone, with the Horcruxes, drinking unicorn blood, like he was trying to cheat death. And so that's very similar to all three of the brothers, right? This article goes on and talks about like humility and how Harry, like, he became more stubborn, but he was still very humble, and was like not afraid to face death when he needed to.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And he wasn't driven by his ambition. Which the Peverils were, do you think they were all Slytherins? Totally side tangent, but I feel like, or do you think they would have been in different houses?
I think the smart one was a Hufflepuff. The cocky one was a Gryffindor.
Oh, God.
And the mopey one was a Slytherin.
Oh, my gosh.
Ow. Are you okay?
Yeah, my cat just attacked me. Go away. Sorry. And then this article ends on the topic of grief and how, like, in the story, the Resurrection Stone is trying to solve the grief that he feels for his lost love, right? And that's something that Harry has to learn throughout the books, is that, like, no amount of magic or power can give you emotions of happiness or fix your grief that you have or your sadness that you have. So it even says, like, a cheering charm wears off eventually. And so you can't fake any of those human emotions, no matter how hard you try with the magic that you have. It'll be like, and it says here, it'll be like you're living a life of a ghost, which is just a feeble imitation of life. And so magic can't be a cure for grief, and you need to face it head on. So any of you out there who's struggling, you got this. We're here for you. Harry Potter's here for you.
Harry Potter. No, that's, I just kind of find it, I think all of the stories from the Tales of Beedrill the Bard are very, very intriguing. But yes, the Tale of the Three Brothers was obviously the most explanatory. It definitely showed us a lot more depth of Harry Potter. But one of my big questions was, how did these stories become legends? Because their names are ridiculous. Because he's got, like, the Wizard and the Hopping Pot, the Fountain of Fair Fortune, the Warlock's Hairy Heart, Babbity Rabbity and her Cackling Stump, and the Tale of the Three Brothers. Just, I just, yeah.
You know, one of the very many magical things at the Wizarding World of Harry Potter is that if you go sit in Diagon Alley, they have the Tales of Beetle the Bard performances.
Yes.
Where they act out with these amazing puppets, each of these stories. And they obviously will do the Tale of the Three Brothers, and people will, they like that one the most. But it's, they've got the Fountain of Fair Fortune, and they're all really interesting and very well done. And it's That's just awesome. Fun. You're just like walking around, and all of a sudden they just like actors pop out of nowhere with these puppets. You could just sit there sipping your Butterbeer and listen to these legends.
Listen to the legends. I like it. I like it. So my question to you guys is, what would you choose? The wand, the stone, or the cloak?
The cloak.
You're saying that because Dumbledore said earlier you'd be a fool to choose the other two.
No.
I know, Nadine. Yes. I know.
Yes. Well, no, I think obviously that brother was the most successful.
Yeah, but if you but didn't know.
Even that aside, I wouldn't have much use for any of the other ones.
But the wand could probably do what the other two do. All-powerful wand? Like, you could cast the best disillusionment charm in the world and be invisible and maybe bring That's people true. Back from the dead. I don't know. Did he ever try? He didn't care, so he didn't ever try.
I don't think he had the There's time to try. There's
a really interesting path. Like, it talks about how, because, you know, people... Typically, the wands choose the wizards.
Yeah.
But it's opposite with the Elder Wand. It's the wizards that that seek after the wand.
Oh.
And because of that, and all of the owners that it's had, and it wands are learning. They learn the ways of their masters.
Yeah.
And so that wand only gets more and more powerful with each owner that it gets, because it. Takes in which makes it stronger.
But wizards all have like different specialties of magic, right? Like they all have strength.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's brought with it the expertise of all of the powerful wizards that have owned it. And another interesting fact was that one of the commentary, it says that no witch has ever claimed to own the Elder Wand. And he says, make of that what you will. But it also says claimed. You know? Like, it might just be, well, a woman is smart enough not to boast about.
I got She's the not going to get it and be like, I have the most powerful wand in the world.
Dead. Yeah.
Which has happened to most of its owners. So.
Yes.
Except for the females, because they were, like you said, probably smart enough to keep their mouth shut about it.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was kind of interesting, because I know there was also a big debate about who's the true owner of the Elder Wand after the Fantastic Beasts, because...
Everyone thinks Tina.
Yeah, they Tina
disarmed him.
Disarms Grindelwald at the end of the movie.
Oh.
So people think Tina is the true owner of the wand and that it shouldn't work for Grindelwald properly.
That's interesting.
Maybe they'll answer that in the next Fantastic Beasts movie.
Freaking yes! year away.
I know.
Did you see it's confirmed in Rio de Janeiro, though?
No, but that's cool.
That got confirmed. We had that theory like months ago on our podcast. And they just confirmed it last week, so.
Nice.
I mean, it was a pretty solid theory.
Yeah,
she tweeted it.
Was like, Rio, here we go.
Yeah, but apparently the casting director or whatever was like, JK, what are you doing?
Stop spoiling.
We haven't confirmed anything yet. So we know that Dumbledore takes the wand from Grindelwald when he's in prison, right? And that's how Dumbledore becomes the master?
No, Dumbledore beat him.
Yeah.
It's in the duel?
In the great duel.
Okay.
1945.
So when did Voldemort get it from Dumbledore? Oh, duh. Never
when
mind.
He took
I'm so
it
sorry.
From his grave.
It's like an cold, iconic part
dead
of the movie.
Fingers.
I'm never mind. Never mind.
Yeah, no, that's it. It's got like all of Dumbledore's notes of like who had it and when and in what century. But yeah, from what we know from the Potter series, it goes, we see it in the hands of Gregorovitch, and then Grindelwald takes it from Gregorovitch. Dumbledore takes it from Grindelwald.
Draco becomes the master, even though he never doesn't hold it.
Yes.
And then Voldemort takes it from Dumbledore.
And then it goes to Harry.
Well, then Harry overpowers Draco, and he technically becomes, and he hasn't touched it yet. And then they face off, and the wand's like, wait, what the? And then doesn't work.
I'm rewatching the movies right now because I haven't seen them enough. And in the fourth movie, they totally have Dumbledore with the Elder Wand, and you can totally see that it's like the Elder Wand.
Yeah.
I need to watch the third movie and see if it's that far back. But.
So cool.
I thought it was interesting.
That'd be cool.
I was so proud of my kids the other day. I have a little Elder Wand pen.
I have the same one.
Yes. And they were fighting over it, of course. And my son just yells, hey, don't take my Elder Wand.
That's so cute.
You know it's an Elder Wand.
Nadine's like, you are not the favorite child.
That's awesome.
That's cute. That's cute. Well, that is Tales of Beat of the Bod, Tale of Three Brothers. Remember that you can always reach out to us on social media at We Solemnly Swearcast. Ask us your questions, tell us your insight, or let us know if you disagree with anything we said. Let us know if you would choose the wand, the cloak, or the rock, the stone. Doesn't sound very cool when you say the
wand. The rock.
The rock Johnson. I'll choose that.
There you go. I always think of that chicken eating the rock. All right. Anyway, we would love to hear from any and all of you.
Mischief managed.